Welcome to It's All Politics from NPR News. I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
And we are joining you from the studios of Minnesota Public Radio this week as we bring you our global review of the two conventions. And Ken, just moments ago, I think balloons are still falling in the XL Center where John McCain has just accepted the nomination of the Republican Party. And we are, shall we say, resonating from 8 nights of the two major party conventions. And Ken, your thoughts.
Well, you know, the listener was wondering where was our podcast last week, and every time we did one, the developments were so quick, overturned, so much has happened, so much changed, that we had a lot of obsolete podcasts that you could still get on KTEL Records for $4.95 plus shipping and handling. But the Republican thing just ended like moments ago. John McCain and
still
Sarah Palin.
Really. Still resonating. I'm still there.
The last time we did a podcast, I don't think we mentioned the name Sarah Palin.
I don't think we mentioned the name John McCain. Didn't we think his campaign was over? Oh, no, it wasn't
that long ago.
It wasn't quite that long ago. It just seems that
when
it's
the media
been that
elite,
long.
When the media elite decided that he was no. Speaking of the media elite, what I thought was most. There were a lot of interesting things about this convention, especially the last 2 days. Wednesday night, the Sarah Palin speech, and Thursday night, the John McCain speech. And I thought it was interesting that on a Wednesday night, there was a lot of attack on Democrats, attack on the media elite, especially from Sarah Palin's electrifying speech.
Were your ears burning, Ken, when she was talking about the media elite in Washington?
Well, she did mention Kenny Rudin.
I thought that might have made you feel she was honing in on you.
I kind of liked it.
Well, not being in Washington, I was sure she wasn't talking about us.
But today, on Thursday night, John McCain's acceptance speech, you didn't hear that rancor. It was almost like reaching out, talking a lot about bipartisanship. Another thing that struck me about John McCain is that he talked about we have to have change in Washington. We have to stop. Washington can't be behaving the way it's been behaving. As far as I know, the president of the United States is what party?
Well, no, you don't understand, Ken.
I'm sorry.
That person you're talking about, the president of the United States, that person does not exist anymore. Because if he were to exist, we would have heard him referred to by name. But tonight, for example, in a video that was talking about 9/11 and when John McCain himself talked about the president of the United States keeping us safe from another terrorist attack, that president remained nameless. And when he talked about his father,
that was very interesting.
He said the 41st president of the United States, and like everybody had to go to their calculator.
And his wife of 63 years. So I figured that had to be Herbert Hoover and
I figured it could be Lou Henry Hoover. Who else could it be? Mm. No, look, that's bizarre.
Yeah, I thought it was too.
We've been to a lot of conventions, and Ronald Reagan dominated so many conventions that even after he had not been the sitting president, he was still brought out and lionized in person at the 92 convention. And certainly the 88 convention was largely devoted to him. Even Bill Clinton, in some eclipse in 2000, was still a major, major figure at his convention. George W. Bush not only wasn't here, he was scarcely mentioned.
Yet, on Monday of this week, when President Bush appeared in that video, Tuesday of this week, when President Bush appeared in the video, he did get a thunderous applause. And there were a lot of buttons, sometimes I try to mix my work with searching for buttons, which is sometimes more important.
Oh, I thought that's what you meant by your work.
But there were a lot of buttons on the floor that said, "Thanks, W," with pictures of Samuel Alito and John Roberts. So, but the Bush
that's a
legacy,
respectful glance.
But the Bush legacy, I think, was there in the hall. And every time he was mentioned, he did. But you know who didn't mention him? His successor.
That's correct. And John McCain was so, I thought, pronounced about not mentioning the name of his predecessor that it seemed as though this was the change he was talking about. He was trying to push off of the Bush administration almost as much as the Democrats had been doing the week before. Of course, they had been doing it much more explicitly.
Well, remember, the word used to be experience. Until it was Sarah Palin, the word was experience. I, John McCain, has the experience. You, Barack Obama, do not have the experience. Now, I think with the addition of Sarah Palin, it became less experience and more change. We will shake up Washington. John McCain and Sarah Palin will shake up Washington.
And surely they do represent change. And
What did you call me?
I apologize. Okay. I won't call you Shirley again. But Sarah Palin certainly is a subject we want to discuss. But before we get there, I want to play just a little bit of tape of John McCain's acceptance speech tonight because I think it makes the strongest point of his speech.
I fell in love with my country when I was a prisoner in someone else's. I loved it not just for the many comforts of life here. I loved it for its decency, for its faith, and the wisdom, justice and goodness of its people. I loved it because it was not just a place, but an idea, a cause worth fighting for. I was never the same again. I wasn't my own man anymore. I was my country's.
I was surprised to hear John McCain spend so much time on his Hanoi Hilton experience in the final night of the program, only because it had been the major theme of every other major speech. Sarah Palin talked about it. Rudy Giuliani talked about it. Fred Thompson rehearsed it in excruciating detail. And I suppose that the determination was, if the candidate himself doesn't hit it on Thursday night, it undercuts all the rest of them, and that's the one night that you can count on people tuning in to watch his acceptance.
I think the problem is, with an unpopular president, with rising gas prices, with rising food prices, with the war unpopular.
War is unpopular.
And I think John McCain's life story is still his biggest selling point. He didn't come up with specifics. If you listen to his speech, I don't believe he mentioned the word immigration policy.
Never.
There were no specifics on tax policy, except for the fact that the Democrats will raise your taxes and I'll lower them, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, and also he did have two paragraphs I thought were fairly effective, cataloging some of the areas in which he had disagreed with his party, leaving out, again, immigration. But he talked about being, you know, the anti-earmark guy. He talked about trying to bust up the campaign finance system and get rid of large donations by labor unions and things of that nature. Sure, we did hear about some of his maverick credentials.
Can I just interrupt for 1 second? Because I was just thinking of what you said. You know, in 1992, we knew over and over and over again Bill Clinton shaking hands, a young Bill Clinton shaking hands with John Kennedy. But at the 92 convention in Madison Square Garden, when you saw that video of Clinton actually shaking hands with Kennedy, it still was emotional. So we have heard that the Hanoi Hilton, the beatings, the torture ad nauseum for at least 8 years now. And yet, seeing it one more time at the convention, I think, was a moving. I mean, look again, you know, you don't want to talk about 26 years in Congress because that's not what Americans want to hear. You don't want to talk about how the Republican Party is going to control government when we've seen what the last eight years look like. So I still think that is a compelling story, and I still think it resonates.
Yes, I think so, too. It is his wheelhouse. It is his stock and trade. And also, I think we have to remember, we're not the audience for that speech. The audience for that speech would be people who are on the fence, don't know which way they're going to vote in November, and are tuning in to learn something about John McCain. Some of them haven't heard that story.
Speaking of us not being the audience, this is interesting, too, because we have not left St. Paul yet. We're still in St. Paul. And the reason I point that out is that, as far as I know, having been in the hall on Wednesday night listening to Sarah Palin, I thought she hit it out of the park. Forget about with fact-checking, things like that. I think she said exactly what was needed. I also noticed that John McCain was not defensive about her. I thought that given the uncovering of stories about this and that coming out of Alaska, coming out of Wasilla, you thought that, oh, no, we have another Dan Quayle here, if not another Tom Eagleton here. But the point is that Sarah Palin ultimately became the most popular person in the entire hall.
I think John McCain was in serious danger of being upstaged by her at this convention. In fact, at the very last moment, after John McCain had finished his speech and she and her husband came out on stage to join John and Cindy McCain, there was a noticeable escalation in the excitement in the crowd and in the cheering of the crowd. These are people who were largely won over to John McCain by the fact that he became their nominee. He wasn't their preferred nominee in the first place, that is to say the hardcore Republican and social conservatives in particular. They adapted to him because he was the guy who was last man standing and a lot of other conservatives' candidates went down.
And probably most likely to win in November, I mean, given the situation.
From a practical standpoint, that's right. But the excitement, the emotionality, the animal emotionality of it really came with Sarah Palin. First, her naming. Secondly, the attacks on her are so perceived as attacks. The questions that were raised,
by the media.
Issues that were raised by the media really got people angry. And then they transferred that into affection for her, particularly when she was so effective with that low-key but driving and tough style in her speech on Wednesday night. She upstaged him.
And now I've noticed a pattern with our opponent, and maybe you have too. We've all heard his dramatic speeches before devoted followers. And there is much to like and admire about our opponent. But listening to him speak, it's easy to forget that this is a man who has authored two memoirs, but not a single major law or even a reform, not even in the state Senate. This This is a man who can give an entire speech about the wars America is fighting and never use the word victory except when he's talking about his own campaign. But when the cloud of rhetoric has passed, when the roar of the crowd fades away, when the stadium lights go out, and those styrofoam Greek columns are hauled back to some studio lot. When that happens, what exactly is our opponent's plan? What does he actually seek to accomplish after he's done turning back the waters and healing the planet?
I think a lot of us are now almost can't wait for the Sarah Palin, Joe Biden debate, vice presidential debate. Now, of course, they have been great vice presidential debates in the past. Lloyd Benson, Dan Quayle was classic. And, of course, everybody thinks of Lloyd Benson wiping the floor with Dan Quayle, but Bush Quayle won 40 out of 50 states. I keep saying, we've said this for a long time, that running mates do not matter. Ultimately, it's between McCain and Barack Obama, and that's what will be the choice. But I think this will be watched perhaps more closely, if that's English, than any other VP debate in history.
Yes, I think that's correct. Now, let's go back and talk a little bit about that other VP choice and about that other convention, because we are still catching up with what was a historic convention in its own right in Denver, particularly the part of it that took place in Invesco Field at Mile High. That stadium rocking with 85,000 people a week ago tonight, the extraordinary light show, the extraordinary effects, the speeches, and so on. That was a little bit different from any kind of a nominating convention I have ever seen.
The record's clear. John McCain has voted with George Bush 90% of the time. Senator McCain likes to talk about judgment, but really, what does it say about your judgment when you think George Bush has been right more than 90% of the time? I don't know about you, but I'm not ready to take a 10% chance on change.
I mean, we're thinking of Barack Obama's speech on Thursday night, last Thursday night, as one of the great speeches, you know, a very dramatic moment of the week. And yet going into Denver, before we even got there, the real question was about Hillary Clinton. Would she be on board? Would Bill Clinton be on board? Would they embrace the Barack Obama candidacy? A lot of people were trying to compare whether, you know, remember Ted Kennedy in 1980 when he was on stage with Jimmy Carter? There was a body language that showed that he'd rather be anywhere else. We were wondering whether Hillary Clinton would have the same kind of ambivalence, and yet she came through. I thought she and Bill Clinton both came through with flying colors.
Yes, and the anticipation, of course, going back to the Carter-Kennedy conflict, was heightened when Ted Kennedy himself came out on Monday night and delivered a kind of, well, what might be a farewell.
The dream shall never die.
Exactly. He did a brief speech, got up out of his convalescent bed from suffering, of course, from brain cancer, and he came to the convention. He gave this speech. It brought back the memory of his 1980 speech, and then people wondered, what will Hillary and Bill do? Here's what Hillary did.
My friends, it is time to take back the country we love. And whether you voted for me or you voted for Barack, the time is now to unite as a single party with a single purpose. We are on the same team, and none of us can afford to sit on the sidelines. This is a fight for the future, and it's a fight we must win together.
I thought there was no doubt in Hillary Clinton's remarks that she was completely on board. I think, Ron, the question that everybody had was Bill the one who was so mollified?
Okay, so judge from this now what he had to say and what he was trying to say.
Together, We prevailed in a hard campaign in which the Republicans said I was too young and too inexperienced to be Commander-in-Chief. Sound familiar? It didn't work in 1992 because we were on the right side of history. And it will not work in 2008 because Barack Obama is on the right side of history.
I think going into the Democratic convention, I think it seemed like the polls were pretty even. By the end of that Thursday night, after the 4 days in Denver, it looked like Barack Obama in the tracking polls had maybe a 7-8 point lead. And now we have a week of Republicans where it seems to have narrowed. Now what next? When's the next time we could see what's happened in the two conventions?
I think we're still going to be measuring for a few days how much bump the Republicans actually get. The initial bump seemed to be attached to the Sarah Palin enthusiasm. We'll see how the McCain speech was received and then how this all sort of resonates as we go further into the month of September. The two campaigns are going to go out on the trail. They're going to compete for media attention. They're going to see which one of the two tandems seems to play better. And
three presidential debates, one vice presidential debate.
That's right. So those are all big struggles out there still to be fought. And this is going to be a test of not only the underlying politics of this year, the supposed good weather for Democrats, the supposed good situation for Democrats, and the economy still a huge question mark, but also a test of the narratives. I think the Republicans have really decided here to push the idea of compelling narratives, the compelling John McCain, Hanoi Hilton narrative, and the compelling Sarah Palin, I took on the good old boy network of Alaska and defeated it narrative.
And what to do with George W. Bush, which I think that they still have not decided on.
And we're still looking, of course, at the narrative the Democrats laid out in Denver, which is, of course, the first African-American president nominated, the meteoric rise of this orator, this person of ideas, but a person of fairly brief resume in actual federal government service, combined with Joe Biden, the flip side of the Republican ticket with all the experience on the vice presidential level.
And speaking of which, by the way, if you haven't heard a podcast, if you haven't heard about politics since our last podcast, it is not Tim Pawlenty.
No, the Pawlenty wave crested, I think, a little early. And that's it for this week's political podcast.
You can follow NPR's political coverage at npr.org/elections.
I'm Ron Elving.
And I'm Ken Rudin.
Join us again next week for It's All Politics from NPR.
In Washington.
Do I dress for every situation? Moving through the doorway.